A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate
space.
On Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 196. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about The Champions. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're talking about a classic bit of 1960s rather fun spy-fi. The Champions, a programme from Lou Grade's ITC production company for the ITV network. One series, 30 episodes, they run about 50 minutes each. This was a colour show and it ran from 1968 to 1969. And it is, I should say, Brian, it's sort of a fun show, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's a fairly typical spy adventure series with secret agents and missions and spy capers and what have you, with the added twist to it that these are secret agents that have superhuman abilities. So we should elaborate on that and get into the setup of this. Craig Sterling, Sharon McCready, and Richard Barrett are agents for a United Nations law enforcement organization called Nemesis. And they are effectively spies or secret agents, and they are based in Geneva. And they are on a mission and they're in the first episode when their plane crashes in the Himalayas. And they are sort of stuck and crashed and injured there.
But of course, they are rescued and they are in, I suppose, almost typical fashion. They are rescued by a hidden Tibetan society who not only heal them, but in the process give them these superhuman abilities that will make them the champions. I don't know. There's an awful lot of these hidden Tibetan societies in film and literature, I think, Brian.
Yes, there seem to be a few of them, aren't there?
Yes. And of course, if you do happen across them, it's usually very, very beneficial because they've all got something magical to gift to us. But anyway, so having been healed and given these special abilities, the trio return to Geneva and continue as they were before, as you say, as some form of secret agent, super spy, as part of this international crime fighting organization. But interestingly, they do keep their special abilities secret to themselves. They don't reveal it to the organization, and in particular to their boss, who we'll talk about in a moment.
Yes, they were told very clearly by the mysterious Tibetan civilization representative who helped them. They were told very clearly they must not reveal that they have these abilities and they must not reveal the existence of this civilization.
Okay, so let's talk about these characters and in particular this main trio of the champions. As you've said, Brian, the first one, Craig Sterling, played by the American actor Stuart Damon. Now, I think he's probably best known to US television viewers because he was, for a very long time, was in a long-running series called General Hospital. And Craig Sterling is very much the sort of typical action hero. He's an American pilot. He's the typical sort of good-looking super spy, very good in a tight spot, a sort of American James Bond type character.
Yes, and he helps bring the idea that this is an international team, that it's not all British people doing this. You have an American in there. And I'm sure they were thinking about American audiences with this as well.
Sure, absolutely.
Sharon McCready, played by Alexandra Bastido, is a scientist and a doctor, very intelligent and well qualified, and she is there as one of the agents getting involved and doing all sorts of things with them, and is sometimes sort of the brains of the operation when they are out in the field, and sometimes bringing sort of the medical or the scientist type of skill set to things.
Yes, she is. And another one of those sort of very sort of typical 1960s actresses, blonde, striking, with the sort of upswept blonde hairdo. Yes, another very attractive lady. Interestingly, they sometimes do turn to make her the damsel in distress, and she's not given quite so much to do as the two male leads, although their abilities are basically identical. And then in other episodes, they sort of push her into situations where she can use her abilities more, so it does vary slightly.
It does, yeah, that's definitely true. Richard Barrett, played by William Gaunt, who we remember most, I think, as Orsini in Revelation of the Daleks on Doctor Who from the 1980s. He's done lots of British television. He is the third of our team of agents. He's a British code breaker and infiltrator. So he is very much an action hero, almost as much as Sterling is, and is very much the spy and the secret agent as part of this team.
Yes, and it's a nice performance, I think, by William Gaunt, which we'll get into when we talk about it a bit more in the second episode. But as Tony on Facebook pointed out, he does play the role with a certain almost sort of amused sense about it, which is quite fun to watch.
Yes, for sure.
And I've mentioned their boss, the gentleman called Tremaine, played in no-nonsense fashion by Anthony Nichols. He heads up this international crime-fighting organization, Nemesis, in the Geneva headquarters. And he does show some suspicions as to how his agents can do the things they do and how they seem to solve and crack cases that would appear to be impossible. It's not really followed up on, although we'll talk about in our second episode, there's perhaps one episode where he makes an effort to try and find out what's going on.
Yes, it's something that they play with, and he is suspicious of how they did things on many occasions, and I think the actor plays it well. But yeah, it's something that they weren't able to follow up on very much. So we should get into the powers and abilities that these characters have, because it's quite important to this show. They're sometimes referenced as the qualities and abilities of a superhuman, which include superhuman strength, speed, stamina, and agility, physical things of that nature.
Yes, they've also got a sort of enhanced senses, so we know that they've got very good vision, that they can more or less see in the dark, and that they've got very acute hearing. And interestingly, that's demonstrated almost in a fashion that we'll see a decade later when we see the bionic man using his bionic vision, or the bionic woman with her bionic ear. It's that same sort of musical effect that you sometimes get.
Yes, that's right. And they are said to have increased mental abilities as well, although we don't always see that, but sometimes they refer to that we get sort of superhuman mental abilities. And they have, it seems, a form of telepathy that allows them to see when one of the others is in trouble. So when someone is in danger, the other two will get an image of exactly what's happening to them. Not necessarily where it's happening, but what's happening. And this is something that comes up quite a bit. We also have them talking to each other from a distance, which it's not clear if that's because of their hearing abilities or if that's actually telepathy as well.
And we should say that the special abilities and their depiction does tend to vary slightly depending on the plot. And in particular, I think the telepathy thing, Brian, it depends what the episode requires. In some situations, it seems to be that it only works when one of them is in severe trouble. In other episodes, it seems to be something they can do at will. So some of the their skills and special enhanced superhuman abilities, well, they sort of come and go a bit depending on what the plot demands.
Yes, that's right. And we know that they are physically stronger and, you know, better at jumping and fighting and so on. But sometimes their abilities in that area are greater than they are at other times. So sometimes a squad of people are quite easily able to capture them, to capture one of them. And at other times, they can, one of them can fight off a group of people quite easily. So there's some inconsistency there, but we'll get to more of that later.
Okay. And each episode begins after we get a little teaser of before the credits of what the episode is going to be about. We then get the post-credits sequence where we'll see one of them usually using their extraordinary abilities to solve some sort of situation in everyday life. So we get this introduction and a voiceover that explains the setup very quickly for new viewers. So we're told at the start of each episode how they gain their powers and what they do with their powers and how they work for Nemesis and so on.
Yes, that one scene in each episode is the only time we get narration in this show. There's a narrator for that, and then we don't get narration at other times.
Okay, so let's turn to our production notes. This was, as we've said, an ITC production, and it's created by a duo that we've encountered before. Dennis Spooner and Monty Berman.
Yes, we talked about Randall and Hopkirk Deceased, the detective show with a ghost being involved. And that was a little later from 1969, but fits very much into the same era and style of shows. So it's interesting to see their work on these two different shows. And they were also involved with creating The Saint for TV, Department S, Jason King, and The Adventurer. So a lot of different shows, especially from the 1960s. And the writers for the show included, of course, Dennis Spooner himself, who was quite an active writer at the time. He also wrote for Doctor Who. Brian Clemens, who was involved with the Avengers from very early on, and Terry Nation, who, of course, we know from creating the Daleks for Doctor Who, and later in the 1970s for creating Survivors and then Blake 7. So very interesting to see him here.
Yes, lots of interesting writers. And also the note that they used one unfilmed script from the earlier Patrick McGoohan series, Danger Man, that series that we talked about a little bit when we covered The Prisoner. And I don't know which episode it was, Brian. If any of our listeners could tell us which was the episode from Danger Man that became an episode of The Champions, I'd be interested.
Yes, that would be interesting to hear more about.
You've mentioned the writers. We'll also talk about the directors. We've got several episodes directed by Cyril Frankel, who'd also done episodes of The Avengers. We've got that famous cinematographer Freddie Francis directing. Roy Ward Baker's here. And as I note, there's even one episode directed by the American filmmaker Sam Wanamaker. So, some interesting directors on board as well as the writers.
Yes, some pretty strong people there, both on the writing and directing side. So it's certainly interesting to see that.
And as we've said, it's set in Geneva and several other international locations. But I have to say, mostly it's filmed at Elstree Studios. So there is quite a bit of stock footage, I think, Brian.
They do have some location footage that they use for this as well, I believe.
And as well as that, you may notice certain sets tend to crop up more than once. In particular, there's a staircase, which I noticed a few times, I think, Brian.
Ah, yes. The theme music was by Tony Hatch, and it's played over what has become a fairly iconic title sequence of the three leads in front of the fountain at Lake Geneva, the fountain being used in stock footage quite a bit there. But that scene, I believe it was done with back projection, where you have one of the leads standing out in front and the other two in the back projection footage along with the fountain and the backdrop there. So it gives you a nice sort of look to it that's just slightly unusual, which is kind of nice.
And to answer a question from Facebook, yes, we believe that fountain is still there. I can't remember the name of it. It has a French name, but it is still a very famous tourist attraction, I think, in Geneva.
Yes, they used the fountain to signal whenever they were at headquarters, because the building we see that is apparently the headquarters of Nemesis is almost right next to the fountain. So that building and the fountain are what show us we're at the headquarters of Nemesis. The Champions was broadcast on the ITV network in 1968 and 1969, and it also had several repeats. It was broadcast in the US. It was sold to Italian television as Tre Aci, or Three Aces, and became quite established as a fairly well-known show.
Yes, it's another one of these popular and very successful ITC series from the 60s, fulfilling, I think, Lou Grade's goals of making something that would sell well abroad. As you've said, Brian, I think having the American actor as one of the leads obviously helped with that, gave it this international flavour. And yes, apparently successful on Italian television. So Sabrina, if you're listening, you have to let us know something about the history of the Champions on Italian TV.
Yes, and it looks like it was quite a high budget show for that time. So I suspect they had some American broadcast money coming in to support this, as they often did with ITC shows at that time. So we should look at the availability of this.
Okay, well, here in Region 2, we have a network DVD, which was released in 2010. All the 30 episodes, including some clipped bookending sequences for the first episode, which I think were used when they made a stitched-together TV movie for the American market. We've got some commentary tracks on, I think, three of the episodes. We've got a making-of feature, plus another little feature about the reunion of the three leads getting back together after many years. We've got, I think, if you read the Amazon reviews, you'll notice there's some dispute about the order of the episodes. I think one thing we haven't mentioned yet, Brian, is that mostly these are standalone episodes. And as often with ITV productions from the 60s, the broadcast order and the production order varied. So there is some dispute as to which order you should watch the episodes in. But anyway, so there we are, quite a packed DVD box set, currently going on Amazon here in Region 2 for £26. I can't find it on any of the rental sites over here in the UK, but I note it is on the UK iTunes store at a bargain price of £10.99 for the series. Obviously, you don't get any of the extras for that, but you do get all of the 30 episodes.
Okay, that sounds like some pretty good options.
And in Region 1?
Here in Region 1, there are a couple of things. There is a DVD set, which is labeled as Set 1, and it has 15 of the 30 episodes. Now, no Set 2 was released, so if you're looking for DVD releases in North America, you can only get the half of the episodes. That runs for about $98 on Amazon.com. There is also a release called the Spy Collection Megaset, which includes those same 15 episodes, the same four discs of the Champions, and it also includes four discs of The Persuaders, 4 discs of The Protectors and a couple of discs of The Prisoner. And that's sad. The prices go up and down, but right now, when I just look, you could find used copies for about $31 and new copies for $110. So you may find that you can get that set for less than the set of The Champions, and you get some other fun series in there as well. If you want to get all 30 episodes for $50, you can get them on Amazon Instant in the US only. And both US and Canada, you can get them on iTunes for $27. So I think your cheapest option in Canada or the US, if you can do iTunes downloads, is to get all 30 episodes on iTunes. You can also buy individual episodes on iTunes for a couple dollars each. And the DVD set and the Spy Collection mega set could also be good options there.
Okay. At the time of recording, there does seem to be several episodes up on YouTube. Also, you can go to YouTube and check out the sort of iconic credit sequence with that famous backdrop of the fountain. As ever, the quality of the episodes on YouTube varies and they do get taken down. So you might want to go there and get a flavour of the series. But hopefully, if you decide you're interested, you'll come back to one of these buying options that we've been discussing and get hold of some or all of the episodes that way.
In this case, it might be easier even, rather than YouTube, to use Amazon Instant or iTunes and just buy a couple of episodes for a few dollars.
Okay, I guess that will wrap us up for the first part of our Champions discussion.
So next time, we will talk about a few of the episodes in particular, and we will mention some of the guest stars in it. Lots of interesting guest stars from the 1960s.
We'll talk a little bit more about 1960s spy-fi and put this show in some context. Plus, we'll get to our own reviews and give you our recommendations about The Champions. So a fair bit to talk about when we come back.
Yes, absolutely. Lots of interesting stuff with this one, for sure. So you can reach us at BritishInvaders.com, and you can find us at TheGeekCultureNetwork.com, where we are part of The Geek Culture Network with some other podcasts there as well. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders, you can find us there, and that's where we have our community and we discuss things with our listeners, so it's always a good place to gather.
Yes, much fun to be had in our Facebook group, and as ever, our monthly prizes and giveaways from time to time. And also, do drop by vognetwork.com, which is the home of the Voice of Geeks streaming internet radio, where you'll find all your geek listening needs attended to. You'll find British Invaders there on Mondays and Tuesdays, but you'll find several other shows about gaming and films and television and all sorts of geeky goodness.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us, and do come back for part 2. And until then, it's Eamon in England also signing off.